Thanks for tuning in. Welcome to Thursday. Do we have any sponsors this hour? Not one, huh? Okay. It is 7 past the hour. If possible tonight, we'll be talking to somebody from Occupy Boston. And if you are listening to this program and are with the on-site of one of the Occupy movements, want to check in, please do so. Before I get to a piece that was in Army Times today that I think is very, very important to share with you, I want to mention the oldest Catholic newspaper in the country. I think it's in the name of it is The Pilot. And a few days ago, there was a 900-word column written by an associate director for policy and research for the U.S. Conference of Catholic Bishops. It ponders the origin of homosexual attraction from a, quote, born this way, end quote, standpoint. This is what it said, among other things. Disruptive imbalances in nature that thwart encoded processes point to supernatural actors who, unlike God, do not have the good of persons at heart. In other words, the scientific evidence of how same-sex attraction most likely may be created provides a credible basis for a spiritual explanation that indicts the devil. Well, there you go. If you happen to be gay at any given time in your life, if you happen to be homosexual across that broad spectrum of human sexuality, and you have occasion to act on your homosexual tendencies, whether on a permanent, temporary, or transient basis, it's because the devil... Do you get that? The devil is in you. It's the devil that created homosexuality. This guy goes on to say, whenever natural causes disturb otherwise typical biological development, by that he means heterosexuality exclusively, leading to the personally unchosen beginnings of same-sex attraction, the ultimate responsibility, blah, on a theological level, blah, is and should be imputed to the evil one, not God. Oh, my goodness. So this freak writing in this Catholic newspaper is suggesting that God is not the only creator in the universe. The devil creates gay folk. Son of a bitch. I mean, this is now they pulled it from their website. They pulled it yesterday. It sat out there for like 5 or 6 days, and they pulled it yesterday. And they also published an apology. The writer, Daniel Avila, Associate Director for Policy and Research, U.S. Conference of Catholic Bishops. What a sick, degenerate group that must be. You know what I'm saying? What a sick, sick group. But Avila stated that the commentary was not authorized for publication. Oh, but I do apologize for the hurt and confusion the piece caused. Confusion? On the part of whom? You ass. What confusion? There's no confusion here. You're a moron. You're a Catholic moron. You're a Catholic moron that happens to be Associate Director for Policy and Research for the U.S. Conference of Catholic Bishops. Oh, Avila, the guy who wrote this, also acknowledged that he does not support unjust treatment or violence toward anyone. Why would you bring that up? That is the dog that didn't bark, the question that wasn't answered or wasn't asked. Why did you bring that up, Mr. Avila, that you don't support violence? Are you suggesting that perhaps people will read your scummy suck piece that you wrote and had published by the pilot and was out there for 5 days and someone may pick up a gun and go kill Satan, who obviously, according to you, resides inside the beating heart of a queer? Oh, my God. There's an update here. The Reverend James Martin, a Jesuit priest, supports the pilot's decision to retract the column. Reverend Martin told the Huffington Post in an email, quote, Satan doesn't create homosexuality any more than Satan creates heterosexuality. God creates gays and lesbians, loves them into being, and loves them into eternity. He added, opining that their sexuality comes from satanic forces seems to be in opposition to the catechism, end quote. Seems to be. One never knows, though. One never knows what evil lurks in the heart of homosexuals. Son of a bitch. Satan? Now, you got to wonder, this is the oldest publication in the Catholic community. And what, this guy doesn't have an editor, this Daniel Avila? No editor? No one at this oldest U.S. Catholic newspaper took the time to read what this sick son of a bitch was saying? This superstitious evil man? With all his gobbledygook about haints and spirits and things that go flying, flapping through the air and gods and devils and pits of fire? Nobody took a look to see that he just said in a column that Satan created homosexuals. You people wonder sometimes why I just despise religion. All religion. There's a partial answer. What a bunch of crap. What is wrong with these people? I just had to lead with that. Had to lead the program with. I thought you'd enjoy that. Satan. I mean, that's taking it. That is to the absolute edge of the earth. This is the first guy, Daniel Avila, the first one to really go to the limit and say, look, all this discussion about, homosexuals are born, not made, or made, not born. Homosexuality is this, homosexuality is that. No. None of that. I am Daniel Avila. I'm an important man with the Council of Catholic Bishops. And I'm here to tell you the truth. Homosexuality is of Satan. You talk about doubling down. You talk about betting the pot. You talk about throwing everything in all at once and saying, I'll see your psychological disturbance and raise you, Satan. Son of a bitch. Okay, that's all I want to say about that. It is so sick. So sick. So disgustingly sick. Wait till some historian finds a little note someplace written in Aramaic on sheepskin, signed Jesus, and it says, you know, I really, 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 really love James. I enjoyed kissing him last night and running naked through the fields.
Radio right. From the left, it's Mike Malloy.
What the hell is that? Huh? 21 past the hour. Okay, from Army Times, thousands of military veterans are heeding the rallying cry of Occupy Wall Street, saying corporate contractors in Iraq made big money while the troops defending them came home and can't make a living. Joseph Carter, 27-year-old Iraq War veteran who marched yesterday to Zuccotti Park in Lower Manhattan, said, quote, for too long, our voices have been silenced, suppressed, and ignored in favor of the voices of Wall Street and the banks and the corporations. End quote. He's a former Army sergeant. He spoke to fellow Occupy protesters and passersby on Broadway after joining about 100 veterans marching in uniform from the Vietnam Veterans Plaza through Manhattan's financial district. Their unemployment rate outstrips the national average, and it is expected to worsen. They worry about preservation of First Amendment rights, and they are angry. Carter, the sergeant who leads the National Iraq Veterans Against the War Group, said, quote, for 10 years we've been fighting wars that have enriched the wealthiest 1%, decimated our economy, and left our nation with a generation of traumatized and wounded veterans that will require care for years to come. End quote. As you know, in California, a former Marine whose skull was fractured last week when he was just about killed by Oakland police. And in New York Wednesday, during this military display of support, police circled the veterans as they stood in formation in front of the New York Stock Exchange, chanting, we are veterans, we are the 99%. And corporate profits on the rise, soldiers have to bleed and die. Josh Shepard, former Navy Petty Officer Second Class, who was next to Scott Olson when he was injured, read the oath that members of the armed forces take to defend the U.S. Constitution, and he then said, we are here to support the Occupy Wall Street movement. Former Army Specialist Jerry Bordelot said, quote, we are marching to express support for our brother, Scott Olson, who was injured in Oakland. And at the intersection of Wall Street and Broadway, the veterans paused for a moment of silence for the Marine who served two tours in Iraq for these corporate capitalist vampire blood-sucking bastards. Olson was honored yesterday by veterans and other activists at Occupy protests around the nation from Boston and Philly to Los Angeles and Chicago. Now, Bordelot said, who's 24, said, quote, Wall Street corporations have played a big role in the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan. He served several years in Iraq over two tours, ending in 2009, now attends college in New York. He said private contractors have reaped big profits in those countries, and he added, in pursuit of corporate interests that have had a devastating effect on our economy and our country, benefiting only a small number of people. He went on to say the 99% have to take a stand. And there's more here. It's at Army Times, but the point of this... it's one thing to be a police officer to protect and defend the citizens from the predators who do roam the streets. It's something else, again, to think that you are going to wall off and isolate combat veterans. Don't even try. Don't. If the cops in any of these cities want to interfere with peaceful demonstration, I'm not talking about lawbreakers. I'm talking about people exercising their rights under the First Amendment. And if you think your nightsticks and your plastic handcuffs are going to intimidate combat veterans who have served 2, 3, 4 tours of duty in theaters of war, you must be out of your goddamn minds. Don't be stupid, cops. Don't set up a situation where your widows and orphans are going to be mourning you for the rest of your lives. Don't do something stupid. These are American soldiers and Marines who are trying to tell you something. Cops, you're on the wrong side on this issue. You really are. This is about defending and protecting you, Mr. and Ms. Police Officer. Do you not understand that? When you have 100 veterans march down the street peacefully, declaring their intention to let the world know that they're tired of being screwed and fighting capitalist wars. Don't even go near them, Mr. or Ms. Police Officer. Don't. Because that kind of an operation is way, way bigger than you are.
Let Mike do it for you. It's Mike Malloy.
25 before the hour. Republicans did it again. In the Senate today, they voted no on another stimulus-style jobs agenda. They blocked a measly $60 billion measure for building and repairing infrastructure like roads and rail lines. This would have created tens of thousands of construction jobs and gave a little bit of a lift in really depressed areas of the country to economic lift. But Republicans said no, because the most important thing to the Republicans is to, they've said no to everything. And the most important issue to these filthy bastards is making sure that Barack Obama only has one term. Now, regardless of what you think of Barack Obama, and I really do not see him as a very good leader at all, as you know, but he's not Rick Perry, and he's not Michelle Bachmann, and he's not the rest of these trolls and clowns and idiots that they have stuck up there for the Republicans. It almost makes me think about voting for him again just to smash a fist into the face of these pigs like Mitch McConnell. The vote was 51 to 49 in favor of this $60 billion measure, well short of the 60 votes required under the new Senate procedures that would be necessary to start work on the bill. Every Republican opposed the president, as did, of course, Democrat Ben Nelson of Nebraska. This son of a bitch ought to just switch parties. Come on, Ben. Just stop. Get the D from behind your name. Get the hell out of town like Lieberman did. You know, put an I back there, a Q or an X or a Z or a little smiley face. But get the goddamn D from behind your name, Ben. You're no more of a Democrat than, Lieberman. Oh, yeah, Lieberman was the other one who voted no. So, you know, once again, the filthy pig Democrats who are determined that they will destroy the country, even to a further degree than they already have, in order to get the black guy out of the White House. Now, this is so irritating, and really, doesn't it make you, since we only have a two-party system in this country, and both parties stink to high heaven, but one of them stinks like dead fecal material. That would be the Republicans. Doesn't it make you almost decide that no matter what, even though you've been told over and over and over again not to do this, but doesn't it make you feel like, okay, I'm going to vote Democrat one more time? Because other than open bloody revolution, the only way to get rid of these Republicans is to kick their asses out of town. And of course, that means overcoming the rigged voting machines. Every single day that there is a vote in the House or the Senate, I can feel not my blood pressure go up. I have great blood pressure. But I can feel the rage inside me, like, you know, I'd like to get one of these Republican leaders alone for a few minutes and have a peanut butter and jelly sandwich with him and have a nice little chat. You know what I'm saying? It's starting to get to me. It's starting to get to me. All right, as promised, Warren is live at Occupy Boston, I believe. Is that where you are, Warren, Occupy Boston?
Yeah, that's right. I'm right outside South Station, right on the South Station edge of the camp.
Give us an overview of what's going on there.
Well, they had a general assembly tonight, as they do every night, you know, like about 7 o'clock, and I've actually been, you know, scrambling to try to find a couple people to talk to you most of the time, so it's kind of kept me out of the loop tonight. But my friend Alex here, who is also from, he's from Georgia. He's with the media relations. Would you like to talk to him?
Sure, put him on.
Okay. Hello.
Hey, Alex.
Hey.
Hi.
How you doing?
I'm doing fine. You're on the Mike Beloy program, and give us an overview of what has been happening at Occupy Boston in the past 24 hours after what happened in Oakland last night, with to me an obvious provocative move on the part of people who are not part of Occupy Oakland. Do you expect that kind of action against you from provocateurs in Boston?
So far, so good in Boston, you know, as far as them working against us. But we talk about this kind of possibility happening all the time. And, you know, we've got plans set up. We realize that not everybody's on our side. Not everybody's out for us. And, you know, we're going to deal with it. It will be dealt with.
How? What do you think is the best course of action when there's an Occupy March, or there's a General Assembly, or there is a demonstration, and all of a sudden you notice that people are not following the nonviolent aspects of this movement? How do you handle that? What do you think is the best way to deal with those people?
You know, the first thing that you have to do is you have to get those of you who would know that you know are committed to nonviolence. On your side, let them know, let them see what's going on. And just one of the things we can do is build a wall around these people and let cops know and let anybody know. No, this isn't us. This isn't what we do, you know? And you're always going to have people who are going to go out and do what we call autonomous action, do of their own, you know, actions. But we don't stand for that kind of thing. We don't stand for nonviolence. And I think at least here we've got enough people, you know, who are like that, that we can quell the situation pretty fast.
Mm-hmm. Well, what is the next move for Occupy Boston? What did the General Assembly decide tonight, if anything, regarding any further action in Boston?
Well, right now, the General Assembly tonight, we're getting ready for winterization, which is a huge thing for us, trying to survive the winter, make sure we all stay alive.
Mm-hmm.
And that's been on our mind for quite a while. But beyond that, we are trying to establish the type of culture that we want to be, the type of face that we want to put on. We're trying to make sure that the people in camp are better well versed in, you know, the things that they should do, the way that they should behave, the way that they should speak.
Mm-hmm.
Because at this point, we're getting our eyes, you know, eyes are getting on us closer and more each and every day.
That's right.
We want them to know that we're respectful. We might not be the 1%, but we know how to behave ourselves.
Well, Warren mentioned that you're from Georgia, Alex.
Absolutely.
Where at?
Yep. I'm from Broxton, Georgia, in Coffee County.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Okay. It's just funny to talk to somebody with Occupy Boston who has a Georgia accent.
I moved out here after I got out of the Air Force.
I see. What about veteran contingents in Occupy Boston? There was a big demonstration, as you're well aware of, yesterday in
yes.
New York with around 100 veterans. What is going on with veteran activity at Occupy Boston?
Veterans have been really strongly on our side. We have several veterans who reside out here, do work, help out a lot. We have this thing called Camp Alex, a tent out in front dedicated to a fallen veteran. It's very nice. Lots of people stop by. And more than that, we're associated very closely with the veterans of peace up here. They come by every day, they stop, they mm-hmm. bring supplies, they work with us, and we work with them.
Boston cops do not have a reputation of being tolerant when they're told by the city administration to clear the streets. What's the attitude of the Boston cops towards the Occupy Boston movement, as far as you know?
I gotta say, so far the cops have been very tolerant of us. You know, we only had the one incident, and we knew things were going to happen. We overstepped the boundaries. We tested it, tried to expand, and they shut us down.
Mm-hmm.
But other than that, for the most part, they work pretty well with us, and they are respectful of our camp lines, and for the most part, we're respectful of the lines they draw. But at some point, it might come to a head.
Mm-hmm. All right, Alex, if you would, let me talk to Warren again. Thank you very much for taking a few minutes.
No,
all right, and take care of yourself.
And, hi, Mike.
All right, Warren, thanks for putting Alex on. How big is the Occupy Boston encampment tonight? How many people would you say are there?
I don't know. It's in the hundreds. How many people, Alex? About
32 living kids. So at any given time, there's anywhere from 200 to 275 out there.
200 to 275.
Okay.
He said 100 and some odd live-in tents. 132, precisely. Yeah, tents. And you know.
Is there any sort of march or action planned tonight, Warren?
I don't think there's any action or march planned tonight. A couple planned tomorrow, I guess.
All right, Warren. Listen, if you would stay in touch, please give me a call.
Yeah.
Give me a call back tomorrow, same time, same number. All right.
Okay. Yeah, will do.
All right, Warren. Thank you very much. I appreciate you taking time to check in. Take care of yourself. Okay.
Thank you, sir.
All right, Warren.
Have no fear for atomic energy, 'cause none of them can stop the time. How long shall they kill our prophets while we stand aside and look? Some say it's just a part of it, we've got to fulfill the book. Won't you help to sing these songs of freedom, 'cause all I ever have.
Day Screaming with Mike Malloy.
10 before the hour, Mark is in San Francisco listening on Green 960. Hey, Mark.
Hey, Mike, how you doing?
I'm all right. What is what's going on with Occupy Oakland tonight? Just if you have an update.
You know, I really don't know. I couldn't give you a report. I'm here in San Francisco, not that far away. I haven't heard anything so far.
Okay.
I think maybe we need somebody from Oakland to give you a report.
Yeah, yeah, that would be good.
I stick here mostly in town. We have a lot going on here usually. But anyway, what I wanted to bring up, Mike, is how much longer are we going to put up with this this cancer in this country, this Republican Party? I'm not saying the Democrats are great. I got my problems with them.
Right.
But this Republican Party is basically sabotaging the American middle class for 30 years. It's been going on. But now it's even worse. You know, when you have a jobs bill, people out of work, they just kick sand in your face and give you the finger.
Right.
How much longer are we going to put up with these people?
You know, I've been asking that question for a few years now. I have no idea. I don't know. I don't know what it's going to take. I really don't. The Republican Party is out to destroy the United States and replace it. As weak as our democratic system has become, as corrupted as it's become with capitalist and corporatist money, these filthy Republicans want to destroy it completely in order to satisfy their masters. And that would be the corporate people who are running the Republican Party and trying to run the Democratic Party. I don't know how long before there is open rebellion in this country. I mean, the poverty, I just saw something on television, the poverty rate in Youngstown, Ohio is just under 50%. When I was a kid growing up in Toledo, Youngstown might have had an unemployment rate of maybe 1 or 2% and zero poverty because everybody worked. There were factories. There were people making, stuff for the auto industry. And now it's all gone thanks to the capitalists who've decided screw the workers, screw the unions. Let's move everything to some foreign country where we can screw the workers there. I don't know. I wish I had an answer, Mark.
You know, Mike, the thing is people are hurting right now and we're in a crisis. And the Republicans are just basically saying that we got to suffer and they want us to feel as much pain as possible so that they can get in office again and rip the rest of the middle class off. That's their agenda. Now, how much longer are we going to put up with these rats? I tell you, Mike, every time I hear about a vote or I hear anything from Congress, I'm just glad I'm not near Washington because I don't know what I'd do. I really don't. I am so pissed off at what's going on with these Republicans and what they're doing in this country. I don't even have the words to describe it. I am just furious. And I don't know when people are going to start putting their attention on where it belongs. These rats that are enabling all the corporations and the richest people in this country to just destroy us. It's gut-wrenching. It really is.
I know. I don't have an answer. I'm kind of like you, Mark. I'm just wondering how long before the American people... You know, I keep thinking that the Occupy movement has started peeling away this thick mantle of helplessness, this learned helplessness that seems to have settled over this country. Maybe the Occupy movement, you know, I've been saying this, is the vanguard movement to get people to finally wake up and realize what's going on. I hope.
You know, Mike, I tell you, they need to focus on this Republican Party. I'm not saying the Democrats are good. But this Republican Party is a cancer in this country.
It is, yeah.
It really is. And unless we destroy this Republican Party, I don't know if we're going to be able to really get what we want. Because they're in the way. And they're going to do whatever it takes to try to deliver democracy into the hands of the richest corporations and the richest people in this country.
Mm-hmm.
That's not America. These people are anti-American. And we've got to fight them, Mike.
I hear
you. We've got to get people to get on board to destroy this Republican Party.
I hear you, Mark. All right. Thanks, pal.
All right, brother.
Thanks for checking in. This is why the Citizens United bill was so important to the corporatists who run this country now and very close to running the entire thing. Because it opened up the coffers legally for corporations like General Electric that pay no taxes, opened up the coffers of these corporations so that they can now do anything they want to do in terms of influencing or buying what's left of our electoral system. I don't know how to get it back. I really don't. You know, I keep thinking that the only way, you know, power does not relinquish itself. It has to be taken. And the corporatists who demonstrate every single day that they have the power, and the way they demonstrate it, every single thing, as weak as the little efforts that Obama is making to stimulate the economy, the corporatists stop even that by pulling the chains wrapped around the faces of these Republicans in Congress and just, you know, yanking on the chain and saying, don't you dare vote for anything this man puts out there. Do you hear us? And, of course, the Republicans just, you know, slobber on themselves and say, yeah, yes, master, yes, master. So I'm not sure what to do. I mean, I think I know, but I have to be careful about what I see on the radio. We'll be back after this break. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. Seven past the hour. It's the Malloy program. The number is 877-996-2556 if you want to join in. Michael is with Occupy Oakland. Hey, Michael.
Mike, how are you? I just want to say that regarding last night, this particular group that broke off at midnight, and by the way, they had nothing to do with the Occupied Oakland movement.
Right.
You know, as we came back from the Port of Oakland, this thing jumped off at about midnight. Now, these guys were in, of course, all black, and faces fully covered. You could not see anything.
Mm-hmm.
Just their eyes, right? And they began to pull dumpsters, you know, garbage dumpsters in the middle of Broadway. Everybody's going, what are you doing that for? And then they started tossing bottles and stuff.
Right.
Right. And then setting off these bonfires. The reason people say, well, what is Oakland doing? What are we going to do about it? We don't know who these people are,
mm-hmm.
right? All I know is this. The only thing that I can recommend at the next GA, I'm going to suggest that I may take heat for it, is that, and this is some advice for the cadre in Boston, Occupy Boston, is that if you have a small, my idea is this, if you have a small enough march where you can basically surveil your march, if you see people with masks on, have them remove the mask, or they have to be separate from you. That's all you can do. Because this particular group, by the way, if you look at the history of protests in the Bay Area, it's not just the Occupy movement where they go around vandalizing.
Mm-hmm.
They did it. They did it at the Oscar Grant protest.
Right.
They did it up in the if you can even jump back to 2001 at the Battle of Seattle at the WTO. They were there.
Right.
You know, this is what they do. So this is not a new phenomena, right? And when you have between 7,000 to 10,000 people in the street, it becomes an inclusive movement, right? It becomes an inclusive march. It's very, very hard to surveil. You know, because everybody just jumps in, you know.
I completely understand that. And this is a part that really bothers me. Let me tell you something. This morning, about 6:30 this morning, having breakfast with my 7-year-old, and I'm watching the local Atlanta, one of the local Atlanta television channels, and the anchor guy is going through the newscast, and the next story up is about Occupy Oakland. This is the way he starts out. He says, Occupy Oakland. People were looking for a reason for violence last night, and they found it. Now, that's how it's reported. Now, granted, that was an Atlanta radio station, and, you know, Atlanta is, the media here is ultra-conservative, but that's how it's being reported. My feeling is that in any movement like the Occupy movement now, it's gotten to the point where provocateurs are being sent in.
That's right.
People like Breitbart, right. People like Hannity are advocating people to go in and disrupt because, you know, those left-wingers, they're all peaceniks and they're not going to fight back. What I would do, this is only me talking now, I would carry a lead pipe inside my pants, and I swear to God, I'd probably go to jail for this, but you know what? I don't care. I've been to jail before. I'll certainly be going again. But if I saw one of these people deliberately trying to provoke a police response, I would just pull out the lead pipe and go for his kneecap and then try to meld it into the crowd. Now, I realize that's not a very righteous attitude on my part, and I realize that's not keeping with a peaceful movement. But I'll tell you what, when I see people doing that who are deliberately trying to destroy a movement that is based on nonviolence, is based on peace, it's based on respectful display of First Amendment rights, I get furious. And that's where I lose it.
I agree. There's the position. See, this is one of the things that I have discussed in some of the committee meetings, that there's going to come a point, because I come from back in the day, I've been in the civil rights, we had the same problem with the anti-apartheid up in Cal. There's going to come a point when we're going to be confronted by the state. Now, the question is, what are we going to do? And the initial position was, well, we're just going to, you know, we don't want any trouble. I know we don't want any trouble, but when you are confronted, because it's going to happen, you're threatening power now, the power of the state.
That's right.
History shows, what are we going to do? Right? Now, mm-hmm. I went around the camp yesterday and was doing some serious observing. There are people in the base camp that are masked, because I saw it. So one of the things I'm going to do with the GA is to say, look, we're going to march, nobody wears masks, so we can at least see who's doing this. Because the guys who I saw, you know, these guys were big. They were unusually big. A lot of strange. These guys are big, man.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and we know that some of the riot police are huge. I mean, I saw them yesterday. The riot police guys are big, right? So the way these guys are big.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I go, and their faces, you know, usually the anarchist or the ACT UP, there's also a group I hear called ACT UP.
Mm-hmm.
They only cover to the nose, right? But these guys last night were covered the entire, almost looked like terrorists. You
right.
couldn't see who they were. You couldn't make it out. You know, I said, but this is a fringe group. They've been around for a while here. Whether they're anarchists or not, I don't know. We don't know. Nobody's really taking it serious at the local level, because the local press, the sister stations of Cron TV, ABC, they gave us, they dealt with it in some of the local blogs, news blogs. They dealt with the violence and put it in a proper context for once. I don't know what's happening on the national, mm-hmm. from a national perspective, but locally, they actually said, because we, and that's one of my volunteer jobs. We peruse all the media, and they're saying, you know, this is a fringe group that broke off from a peaceful march,
right.
you know, and began to vandalize. You know, so that's why a lot of people don't know what's going on, because we're not dumping the energy toward these people. We know that it's a fringe group. They're a bunch of extremists, you know, and that's where it's at. But I think that the other cadre called from Occupy San Francisco, he made a very salient point. You know, you got these extremists up here in Congress as well, known as the Republicans, as Norman calls them, a.k.a. teabaggers.
Right.
What are we going to do about these guys? Because he's right. The guy from San Francisco is right. These people, I think that they are putting the country in a state of national security, what they're doing up in the Congress.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and something needs to be done. And what I saw yesterday, you know, at Occupied Oakland in the march that we had, I hope that people with that type of that volume of when it reaches critical mass, that I hope they don't get angry, Mike.
Yeah. Yeah, I do too.
Not, because it's going to be something else.
I know. I know. And you're right. Obviously, you're right. Power does not relinquish itself. It's very difficult to negotiate with power, especially when the power has a stranglehold, like the Soviet Union did over their people, like Nazi Germany did over their people, like the Republican corporatist party does over the United States. Power does not relinquish itself, especially when it's power that's based around the idea of exploitation and oppression to benefit a few, and power has to be taken. This has been the history of the human race. I wish it weren't
right,
so,
exactly.
But mm-hmm. but it is the history of the human race. And what has concerned me is that the Occupy movement has a natural organic growth to it, and that's what we've seen so far. And at some point, the power structure is either going to respond with provocateurs, with saboteurs, or they're going to confront this peaceful movement head on, and there's going to be blood in the streets. And how the Occupy movement responds to that is going to be key as to what happens in this country. If the Occupy movement at that point says, okay, this is not what we're about, so we're going to fold our tents and go home, then that's the end of it. If the Occupy movement says, okay, this is not what we're about, but goddammit, nobody is going to crack our heads open when we are exercising our First Amendment rights and doing so peacefully. If you want a confrontation,
well, you're exactly right, and that's called a clear, concise political analysis of protest. I mean, this is inevitable. I've been down here at Occupied Oakland from inception, and this is we had a provocateur come in. You know, on the first day, guy comes into the meeting. We have a library there, a library tent. We have a 17-year-old to 8-year-old girl in there. And she, you know, we take turns, right? And she's monitoring the library. Guy comes in there, you know, this is effing disorganized. You know, everybody comes up in here and looking for something to do. You guys just say, well, you know, we're just mingling, we're talking, and we're trying to get organized. You don't know what the F you're doing. You're effing, I go, wait a minute.
Yeah, hey, Michael, hold on just a second. I got to do a break here. Just stay right there because I want to finish up the conversation with you. We'll be right back.
Your nightly ammunition against right-wing rhetoric. Get locked and loaded with Mike Malloy.
21 past the hour. Back to Michael in with the Occupy Oakland movement. All right. About how to confront what eventually has to be confronted. Any further ideas about this, Michael? Does it come up that often? You said you brought it up in the GA. Does it come up at for serious discussion?
Well, it's just in the discussion stage now because it's just occurred. But you know, we don't want to move toward too much restriction. But I think that's one of the things that I'm going to recommend is that, you know, But then again, with a march of that magnitude, it's very hard to police. It's just very difficult to do. But we can at least address the issue in the GA about the camp, because I saw people there in tents yesterday who were masked. I mean, we hadn't even started the march yet.
Mm-hmm.
This was just during the speeches and, you know, the festive aspect of it.
Right.
But I did see guys in tents with masks on, and not to say that everybody who wears a mask is taking those kind of actions, but there's no reason to cover your face.
Well, no, there's no reason for a mask at all under any circumstances.
Yeah, exactly.
If you are afraid to show your face,
right,
with an Occupy movement, I don't know who you'd be afraid to show it to, the police, your co-demonstrators, the world, I don't know. Then stay home. You know, just
but exactly. And so that I'm glad I got your feedback on this, because I said this is the way we can deal with it, at least within the camp. Okay, so.
Right.
And I saw it yesterday, and that's what I'm going to bring up the next. Right now, it's getting ready to rain, so if we get to organize and stuff like that. But
all right, Michael. Stay in touch. All right. You know, give me a call. We're on this. We're on Green 960 and Sirius the next time every night, 6 to 9 your time, I guess. So just stay in touch, please.
Thanks again, Mike, for all your support, buddy.
All right, appreciate you checking in. Take care. Chad is in Urbana, Ohio. Urbana? Hello?
Hello?
Is this Chad in Urbana, Ohio?
Yeah, it's actually Bourbonnais, Illinois.
Bourbonnais, Illinois?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, welcome to the program, then.
Yeah, fantastic, brother. Listen, did I just hear you compare the Republican Party to Nazi Germany?
I don't know. Did you?
I don't. I'm in a day and age when.
No, what I said was when you have a political entity, whether it is the old Soviet Politburo or the Nazi High Command or the Republican Party, that does nothing but obstruct, nothing but prevent the people from governing themselves. Then, yeah, of course, which is exactly what the Republican Party is doing.
Well, from what my understanding, because I'm kind of a history buff, I think that Nazis killed somewhere in the...
No. Don't do the Nazi trick on me, Chad. I already answered your question about did I compare it to Nazi Germany. So don't even go there. I'm just going to hang up on you and write you off as another right-wing dumbass. So, don't do that. What I said makes sense. The Republican Party is destroying the country. And the way they're destroying the country is by refusing to participate in self-governance. And the way they're refusing to participate in self-governance is the Republican Party is displaying the fact that it is a wholly owned subsidiary of corporate America. It has nothing to do with the people. Now, if you're going to sit back on your lard ass and tell me, oh, well, you're talking about a dire Nazi Germany. I mean, go ahead, but amuse yourself on somebody else's radio program. Don't come here. OK, because I'm just not interested in hearing from people like you. I really am not. I've said that so many times. You know, you can get together with all the right wing radio hosts and have your little circle jerks every day, but don't come here. And don't tell me you're a history buff. Obviously, you're nothing of the sort. You're a jerk. So just don't come here. I mean, seriously, there's no reason for it. I'm not interested in talking to you, and you certainly have no interest in talking with me. So go away. Go do something else. Go wait till morning. Wait till the sun comes up, and then call one of these right-wing freaks and enjoy yourself. But don't come here. I'm serious, man. I'm serious. I wish I could get it across to right-wingers, to Republicans, to teabaggers, to conservatives. I have a big sign out in front of this radio program that says, get off my lawn! That means stay away. You have nothing to say to me or the people who listen to this program with interest. You really don't. You all are brain dead. You have been so brainwashed, so totally, totally eviscerated of anything even resembling political common sense or courage. Go away. 25 before the hour. Chuck is in Knoxville, Tennessee. Hello, Chuck.
Hey, Mike. How you doing, guy?
All right. How are you?
All right. I called tonight to talk to you about your opening story about the Catholic newspaper.
Yeah.
But I first wanted to say something to those who might be listening at the Occupy movements around the world. I just want to say thank you for your integrity, for your devotion to a cause, for your love of humanity.
Mm, absolutely.
You walk in the finest steps of tradition, and you walk with the hopes and dreams of billions of people.
Boy, is that the truth. That is the
Amen.
Truth. Well, those are good words, Chuck. We have a lot of people in these different Occupy movements that listen at night, and I'm sure they heard you, and I'm sure they're very appreciative of that.
I have to run this through in my mind about this Catholic newsletter.
Uh-huh.
Let me see if I understand this right. People who represent an organization whose leaders have been sodomizing children for decades to the tune of thousands, and whose ultimate leader, the Pope, is even suspected of being complicit, are saying that these actions are works of the devil. I just wonder which is more profound.
Yeah, right.
The hypocrisy or the ignorance?
I hear you.
And I find it really hard to figure out which is more so, because both, as far as I'm concerned, have taken it to the ultimate limit. I can't imagine an example of hypocrisy or ignorance that would be more profound.
I can't either. If anybody wants to add the word evil into that mix, I mean, you have an institution here that for 2,000 years has done nothing but saturate the planet in blood, in its absolute determination to kill anyone who doesn't share their faith, either kill them literally or kill them economically or kill them, keeping them in constant poverty by telling them, don't even think about birth control, have a lot of babies, for the Pope's benefit, and don't worry, you'll get your reward in heaven. I mean, this is really a corrupted, sick organization. And then for them to say that people who happen to have a sexual orientation that is not child molestation, that is, you know, adults loving other adults, regardless of what the gender is. I agree with you. I mean, it just enrages me that this organization, this Catholic Church, has the audacity to make a statement about anything. You know what the Catholic Church ought to do? It ought to do what Jesus said. Get rid of all your possessions, cash up everything, and give it to the poor. And until you do that, you're going to burn in hell. And the Pope is going to be in the hottest part of hell, because he's the one who walks around with all the gold and the jewels and the diamonds, all this other crap, while probably 80% of those who follow Catholicism are starving to death. These sons of bitches are going to burn in hell, Chuck, of their own making. I swear they are. It's it gets me angry. Don't even get me started. I mean, I just get furious. Thanks, Chuck. I appreciate you checking in. Oh, these just rancid bastards. Luke 6. Then he looked up at his disciples and said, "Blessed are you who are poor, for yours is the kingdom of God. Blessed are you who are hungry now, for you will be filled. Blessed are you who weep now, for you will laugh." Luke 4:16. When he came to Nazareth, where he had been brought up, he went to the synagogue on the Sabbath day, as was his custom. He stood up to read, and the scroll of the prophet Isaiah was given to him. He unrolled the scroll and found the place where it was written, quote, "The Spirit of the Lord is upon me, because he has anointed me to bring good news to the poor. He has sent me to proclaim release to the captives and recovery of sight to the blind, to let the oppressed go free, Matthew 25. Then the king will say to those at his right hand, come, you that are blessed by my Father, inherit the kingdom prepared for you from the foundation of the world. For I was hungry, and you gave me food. I was thirsty, and you gave me something to drink. I was a stranger, and you welcomed me. I was naked, and you gave me clothing. I was sick, and you took care of me. I was in prison, and you visited me. Now, do any of those descriptions fit an average modern Republican Christian in this country today? And the answer is hell no. Hell no. Mark 10, Jesus looking at him, loved him and said, you lack one thing. Go, sell what you own, give the money to the poor, and you will have treasure in heaven. And then come and follow me. And when he heard this, he was shocked and went away grieving, for he had many possessions. Yeah, no kidding. Don't even get me started on the Catholic Church. From Prairie 2, you are the next right winger. The super rich have been growing in numbers, although their numbers have really increased very slowly, with less than 0.1% who truly qualify for that designation. The Census Bureau reports that the ranks of the now dubbed super poor, or rather they are the extreme poor, who have now swollen ranks to 1 in 15, or 7% of Americans. To qualify for this designation, you must have an income of less than half of the official poverty rate, and this line is extremely low to begin with. For a family of four in the bottom half of the poverty income bracket, remember, there are many far below this line, this income bracket is slightly more than $11,000 per year. In the greatest nation on the planet, we have 21 million people who are in extreme poverty, while the top 25 Wall Street hedge fund managers earned, quote, quote, over $1 billion each last year on average. That's billion with a B, or 100,000 times what millions of American families live on. Right-wingers will point out that $25 billion divided among 21 million people wouldn't make them rich. But that's $5,000 for a family of four, and it would change their lifestyle dramatically while still leaving them in poverty. The thing is, this $25 billion wasn't just a tax on the peasants. Hedge funds make their money by looting and pillaging. It's not carrying off the treasury that does the real damage. It's burning the village, slaughtering the livestock, salting the earth, and poisoning the wells that makes 21 million people into the super poor. The super rich have closed 55,000 factories in the last 10 years, and that wasn't the beginning of their terrorism, having started more than 30 years ago thanks to their patron saint, Ronald Reagan. They have made millions homeless, ruined the livelihoods of millions of farmers in the U.S. and in Mexico, and they are polluting the water table everywhere they can, where they can make a buck, and that's just a few of their crimes. The real damage the 1% has done runs into many trillions each year, converting $1 billion income into the numbers of the super rich. Each of the palatial estates of the super rich could be a city of 100,000. Indeed, census figures show that the poor tend to be clustered in their own communities. Dare we use the word ghetto? This clustering doubles their misery, as the local government has no money for services of any kind, let alone relief for the poor. No schools worthy of the name, no libraries, no city services the rest of us take for granted, and no jobs at an acceptable wage, as most of these people have skills that have been outsourced to China. States, especially the red ones, don't provide anything for poor communities anymore, even to support police protection, and crime is mushrooming. The Republicans in Congress are determined that no federal relief will be forthcoming. The fastest growth in poverty, nearly double everywhere else, is in the suburbs. Formerly the symbol of the American dream, they are now a nightmare of isolation and despair, crime-ridden and deteriorating fast. With no jobs to be had, with no government support, we are creating a permanent underclass. And just so you right-wingers know, in these suburbs, the people are mostly white like you, worship the same God as you, and believe the same right-wing lies as you. You are next. Be like them, or fight back. prairienumeral2.com. To that right-wing troll bastard that called in here from wherever he was calling from. What do you mean about Nazi Germany? He wanted to ask me what how the Republicans are destroying America. There's your answer. There's your answer. All right, I'll get to your calls in just a moment. We have a break here, so we're going to do that first. And then we'll come back and take some more calls. Yeah, I just, this is from Rick in San Francisco. He writes, whether the ninja-clad, self-styled anarchists who attach themselves to every demonstration in the Bay Area are agents provocateurs is irrelevant. Their narcissism serves the elite by enabling it, the elite, to dismiss and or demonize the entire movement. Rick in San Francisco. Yeah, that's the truth. Well, like I said, I just come from the old school where you carry a lead pipe. I'm sorry, that's just me. Because I'm never gonna be enough space. So eat the meat, sick of the taste. It's always gonna be a delicacy. So lift your chops and eat the meat. Next hour, I'm going to be talking about these new statistics from the Census Bureau and about the numbers of poor people in this country. It is just astonishing. American exceptionalism, my ass. This is just unbelievable. And also, I want you to meet someone. Her name is Linda Wall, and she's running for Congress in Virginia, the Virginia House of Delegates, they call it. I want you to meet this woman. she's a real piece of work. Kevin is in Colorado Springs. Hello, Kevin.
Hi, good evening, Mike.
Hey.
I wanted to comment because I'm struck every time I hear or read a story about these yokels you had out in Georgia who wanted to, quote, defend the Constitution.
Oh yeah, we have a lot of them down here.
and what really strikes me, Mike, what you did last night was funny, and it would be funny except for the sadness of it.
Right.
These people want to defend the Constitution and see absolutely nothing wrong with what they were planning, essentially defending the Constitution by violating your rights, my rights, whomever's rights, that we are afforded under the Constitution. And it just strikes me, you know, every time you hear one of these clowns that are running for president on the Republican side talk, it's the same thing. They don't mind destroying our constitutional rights, but God forbid we should say something about what they're saying and try to cut them off.
Well, Kevin, let me give you a workable hypothesis, but it's not. Here's the fact. Every single so-called, these geriatric freaks that were busted the other night, all these people who want to restore the Constitution and are willing to kill their fellow Americans to do it. The common denominator with all these people is that they hate the fact that there's a black man who is in the White House. Everything else is secondary to that. They are not interested. When they talk about, well, we need to get back to the, they're talking about they need to get back to the days when black folk had no rights in this country except those rights granted by the local white sheriff or the local white citizens council. Every single statement made by, I don't care if it's made by teabaggers here or these right-wingers in Arizona or in Michigan, it does not matter. All of it is centered on racism. Everything else flows from the racist attitude of these people. Now, these four yahoos that were busted the other afternoon here in the North Georgia mountains, I mean, these guys only lived to walk upright probably 6 months ago. And they were having their secret covert cell meetings in a goddamn Waffle House. So that, I mean, it's just madness. You cannot take these people seriously, Kevin, on any level other than the fact that racism, a deep and abiding hatred of anyone who's not white and or Christian, is what motivates them. Beyond that, now, I'm not saying they're not dangerous. They are dangerous. But they're also stupid. They're dumber than dirt. That's why it's easy enough to throw a net around these suckers and just haul them off. I hope these four boys, and they will, they'll go to jail for the rest of their lives. There's no mercy on these people when they're finally caught. So, and they'll go to prison where there will be people of color, and those people of color will be very interested in meeting these four dunderheaded racists from North Georgia. It'll be a very fun stay in prison for somebody, right?
I don't disagree with you, Mike.
Okay.
I guess what just troubles me, though, is if you sit and take the time to read the Constitution and realize what a valuable document it is and how in the Declaration of Independence it declares that all men were created equal, and the level of hypocrisy that we've had throughout most of our
history. Well, but you have to acknowledge something else, Kevin, really. If you really want to start reading the Constitution and the Federalist Papers and all the documents put this country together, you got to understand something. The white landowners who put this country together were actively involved in genocide and slavery. And if you want to get into hypocrisy, and I know it gets a little deep, but that has to be acknowledged. These people wouldn't even acknowledge the humanity of black Africans that had been brought to this country to work, you know, provide free labor to these folks. They would not acknowledge the political strength of any sort to women. You know, women didn't get the vote in this country till 1920, for Christ's sake. My mother was 5 years old when women got the vote. So all I'm saying is you got to tread lightly when you accuse and they deserve to be accused, these white morons here in the South, of hypocrisy. The founding fathers, Thomas Jefferson was a hypocrite. Ben Franklin was a hypocrite. George Washington was a hypocrite. I mean, they just were. And when it finally came to the point of representation or taxation, they didn't have the decency to count human beings of color as full human beings. That's all I'm saying. It's not just a clutch of half-asses here in Georgia who are on Social Security and Medicare who are hypocrites. You got to go for the whole clutch. Thanks, Kevin. I appreciate you checking in. We'll be back after the break. Stick around. I'm Mike Malloy. Switching gears, of course, a good way to get whiplash. But I want to get to these other items. Oh, by the way, this hour is once again sponsored by Mary from Suquamish, Washington, whose message is: we love the roar of Mike Malloy. Roar! That's like the lion in the Wizard of Oz, right? Roar! Thanks, Mary. Mary in Suquamish, Washington. We've been there, haven't we? Have we been to Suquamish? Is that where the... we went to Snoqualmie. It can't be that far away. Suquamish, Washington. Thanks, Mary. I don't know. Republican politicians, they're like an alien race. I'm serious. Republican voters are human, but they're lacking huge sections of, apparently, of that part of their brain where they can make rational or even logical decisions. But people who decide to run for office as a Republican, no matter what the office is, apparently, I don't know, they have to be an alien race. Let me give you an example. There's a woman named Linda Wall. She is running on a conservative platform for, she wants to be a member of the Virginia House of Delegates, which is like the state's House of Representatives, any state House of Representatives. In Virginia, they call it the House of Delegates. So she wants to be a representative from her district. Linda Wall is her name. If you see a picture of her, she looks like, what does she look like? Let's stereotype this woman. She looks like, she's got on a red suit and a string of pearls and a short haircut and funky kind of earrings. And she's probably in her early 60s, mid-60s. And it looks like an Avon saleswoman or someone who's active in Girl Scouts or, I don't know. She just has that kind of look. She also looks a bit maybe like a fifth grade school teacher from 50 years ago. You get the picture. But Linda Wall has openly admitted that at one time she had sex with a female minor. Now, she now claims that, you know, she's over all that. Well, that was a long time ago. She's marched for the unborn, she says. She supported the marriage amendment, she says. She admits that she had sex with a female minor, with a kid. But that was a long time ago. Now, she never faced charges for the incident. And she admitted it in an official court deposition about 5 years ago. I'm not sure what the court deposition was about, but in that deposition, under oath, she admitted, okay, 35 years ago, I had sex with a female minor. You know, I'm now a Christian, and I marched in favor of the unborn, and I voted in favor of the Don't Let the Queers Marry marriage amendment. There's nothing wrong with me now. Well, she's never had to answer for that. That lawbreaking, the sexual assault on a minor. Uh-oh. Under Virginia law, if the girl, then she was underage when this sexual assault occurred, and she was a student of Miss Wall's at a junior high in Prince George's County, which is near the near Richmond, if that girl, now a woman, were to file a complaint with police today, lovely Linda Wall could be charged with sexual assault against a minor. See, there's no expiration date on these kinds of charges in Virginia. But consider what happened all those years ago. The girl, then girl, now woman, hasn't come forward yet, and it's possible she never will. And as most people who understand sexual assault victims, in so many cases, they never do come forward for a number of reasons, not the least of which is fear. And apparently Linda Wall is a well-known name in that part of Virginia. I mean, after all, she's an activist. She's a conservative. She's a Christian. She'll do anything to stop the queers from marrying. She'll do anything to make sure that the little fetus zygotes have all the legal and rights of a full-formed adult. So the victim could be afraid of this woman. You know what most people call someone who has sex with a kid? Well, besides that, it's called a child molester. And people who have sex with a child or molest a child sexually carry that, and rightfully so, in my opinion, that mark, that stigma for the rest of their lives. I've read enough that convinces me that people who molest children can never be, quote, cured, end quote. It's there forever. So how do we keep track of them? Well, you register, you're a sexual predator. I'm sorry that a lot of people say, well, that's not fair. That's not right. Once somebody has served their time in prison, no, I'm sorry. This is a tough one for me. I might be able to be convinced otherwise, but the way my mind is set now, you molest a child. You steal from that child the innocence of being a child. You defile that in the most horrendous way with your perverted sexual demands of a child. To hell with you. This is why I so despise the Catholic Church, because they have made an organizing principle of their filthy hierarchy the protection, the hiding, the excusing of priests who violated children. How horrible is that? Well, why would anyone continue to be a Catholic, knowing that the Church protects and defends these predator bastards? How can you do that? How can you remain a Catholic? Oh, my God. How can you remain a supporter of Linda Walls in Virginia? You know what she said? This is her statement. In an Associated Press interview, she said, you know, it's all a minor transgression. She said, quote, 40 years ago, I was a different person. I was a heavy pot smoker with impaired judgment and made some bad choices. You do that out of college sometimes. Some people do, some people don't, end quote. What? She was a school teacher, and she's equating a sexual attack on a child with smoking pot? Oh, my God. But even more disturbing is this bitch thinks that people are going to ignore this and elect her to the Virginia House of Delegates. And you know what? Depending on the district that she's running in, these psychopathic, sick Republican thugs just might do that. Because that's the beauty of their perverted religion. They can do anything. Well, I confessed. You know, God forgives me. God forgives me. So I'm clean now. I molested a child. I abused someone. I took advantage. I did the worst thing you can do, and that is sexually attack a child. And nobody ever made me pay for it. The little twerp kept their mouth shut. Now I want to be a member of the Virginia House of Delegates. Back then, I was a pot smoker, and yeah, bitch is too good of a word. One look. Ask me what it was. Just don't ask me what it was. Just don't ask me what it was. I think it's 'cause I'm clumsy. I try not to talk too loud. Maybe it's because I'm crazy. I try not to act too proud. Only hit till you
revolution starts right now. Here's Mike Malloy.
I hate that. I hate people who assault children, whether it is violent, you know, violence against kids, beating them, smacking them, hurting them. But sexual assault it is such an invasion. It shreds the innocence of a child, just absolutely. And for the people who advocate sex between adults and children, you know, you're a bunch of sick sons of bitches. You really are. You really are. But, there's an attitude out there that that sexual activity between adults and children is not bad if it's done the right way. Well, you know, you people can I'd like to talk with you personally. I really would, because I'd smash you right in your damn faces. I really would. I get that. That's something that drives me right to the edge of violence. It really does. And I'll claim that and admit it and be proud of it. Assaulting a child, especially sexual assault. And yet this crazed woman, Linda Wall, in Prince George's County in Virginia, she has no, well, you know, that was a long time ago. I smoked pot back then. So, you know, really. Deep breath. More evidence is coming to light to indicate just how violent and vicious Target, your favorite Target, you know, where the famous photograph, what was it, a month or so ago, there's Michelle Obama shopping at Target, like most of us have done. You know, Target is a huge retailer. I mean, what are your choices if you want to go to a big box retailer and get stuff cheap? You've got Walmart, you got Target, right? The other ones don't count. You ever gone into those dollar stores? Oh my God! Anyway, so Target, which for a while I think just by default had kind of a reputation of being the not Walmart store, for the people who understood how vicious and anti-American Walmart had become, anti-American worker, anti-American producer, anti-American consumer, anti-American everything, Walmart. Well, Target is following its big brother, and evidence now comes to light indicates that Target threatened to close one of its New York stores if workers there decided to unionize. You see how this works? See how this works? You people want to keep your $7.25 an hour job? Do ya? Do ya? Well, then don't you dare unionize. That's according to the National Labor Relations Board. And because this evidence is starting to present itself in this particular case, it may convince a judge to invalidate the results of a June election in which workers at this Valley Stream, New York Target voted not to join a union, the United Food and Commercial Workers Union. This is all according to the New York business newspaper Cranes. The NLRB's claim comes after an earlier complaint alleging that Target implemented surveillance of its employees and threatened to close the store, among other charges. Surveillance? This is how it works. You know, recently here in, you know, surveillance, threats, intimidation. We even see you talking to a union representative, you little bastard, and you will be out on the street again. You like your Target job? You like your $8.25, your $7.25, your $10.50 an hour? Then shut your mouth. Don't even think union. The way it works here in Georgia, the big announcement made in North Metro Atlanta yesterday. Home Depot is going to open up, Home Depot, going to open up a customer processing or something store. And they're going to hire, are you ready? They're going to hire 700 workers. Whew. Wow. Now, what did the county, I think it's Cobb County, Georgia, one of the collar counties of Atlanta, what did Cobb County have to do to get that, to get Walmart to do, or to get Home Depot? And Home Depot is an Atlanta-based company. What did they have to do to get Home Depot to stay here and not move that particular function of their company to India or China or someplace else. Well, first of all, Cobb County had to give just tens of millions of dollars in property tax breaks, tens of millions of dollars in payroll tax breaks, you know, for the state. Just millions upon millions upon millions. This is at a time when the homeowners in Cobb County are seeing the county struggling and thinking about trying to get in front of the voters a referendum to raise property taxes. Of course, the property owners are going to say no. But as some of the people interviewed on television said, you know, why is it that for 700 stinking ass jobs, Home Depot gets tax breaks that practically bankrupts the county in order to hire 700 people to work for what? Well, the answer, the quick answer from the Chamber of Commerce in Cobb County is the radiating effect of those 700 jobs. Well, that means there'll be little restaurants open and gas stations will have to sell more gas and the dry cleaners will have to have more dry cleaners and the laundromats will do bum, 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 bum. You see how it works. Meanwhile, a corporation like Home Depot loves this. This is what the corporations do. They get counties, they get areas to vie against each other to see how much these corporations can steal in order to open a factory or a plant or an office. And when they're tired of being there, they just wave their middle finger and leave. It doesn't cost a thing to smile. You don't have to pay to laugh. You better thank God for that.
Time I turn on the TV, there's hope. Somebody's acting crazy, there's hope. If you let it, it'll drive you crazy.
Flying monkeys on the air, flying monkeys everywhere. I do not like them on my station. I do not like them in my nation. It's more Mike Malloy.
This hour is sponsored by Mary from Suquamish, Washington. Thanks, Mary. Her message, we love the roar of Mike Malloy. The roar. back to this story about Target, specifically in Valley Stream, New York, where the workers were threatened and intimidated, threatened with the ultimate punishment to a worker, not that he or she would be fired, but that the entire goddamn store would close if the workers had the utter temerity as to want to better themselves and to form a union. Now, the owners, the corporate board and so on and so forth of Target, they have no problem stealing as much as they can from consumers, from their workers. The whole thing is based on theft. They buy products from third world countries, so-called, where workers are paid dirt wages in order to make sure that Target has a nice profit and that the what's left of the American consuming mob has junk to buy in Target stores. But God help you, Target worker, if you decide you want to unionize. Labor historians and advocates watched this battle over the Valley Stream store this summer because they see it as a testing ground for the ability of organized labor to make inroads in Target and the retail sector more generally. Anyway, workers at this Valley Stream Target ultimately voted against joining the union. Well, what do you expect? Of course they did. When they're threatened, they're videotaped, they're recorded, they're watched. It's like prison labor. But it's a job, Mike, so shut up. Yeah, well, you have a point. Several weeks after the vote, Target fired one of the most outspoken advocates of unionizing this store. According to a separate report in Crane's New York Business newspaper, Tashauna Green was fired in August after management saw a union rep drop her off at the store. Now, Target claims they let this woman go because she was, quote, acting in an overly hostile, disruptive manner that is inconsistent with Target's policies, end quote. That's according to Crane's. A disruptive man? Well, of course. Organizing workers into a union? Of course that's disruptive. Of course it is. That gets in the way of Target's theft. Theft of labor, theft of money from its consumers, theft from the people who make this garbage in third world countries. Of course it disrupts their policies. If union reps start working within the store, can't have any of that. Furthermore, Target, in most of its stores, has a new policy. They make new employees watch a video that discourages workers from joining any union. You want a job at Target? Okay, everybody in the auditorium, now watch the video! And I don't know what does the video contain? A union rep who really has great big fangs? And Harry backs of his hands and pointed ears and comes walking into this video depiction of a happy little group of Target employees and starts biting them or something. But you have to watch this video, an anti-union video, in order to work at Target. My God. A guy named Jason Kellner, former manager at an Oxford, Alabama Target, said the company let him go after he was caught working when he was not clocked in. But Kellner claims he was regularly denied a break while he worked at the store, and working off the clock was expected of him. But somebody must have filed a complaint. Uh-oh, hey, listen, you know, these people have been working for free for us. You know, the old Walmart trick, they lock the employees in at night, even when they're off the clock, and they finish up what they're supposed to do before we let the little bastards out. Well, in this particular case, the guy was working off the clock, and Target, oh, no, we'll be found out. Quick, fire him! Oh, fire him for doing what he was told to do. Work for free. And don't get me started on Walmart. So, you know, just little slices of Americana here in the age of corporate greed and the age of the Occupy movement and the age of the initial steps in bringing this entire filthy, corrupt political economic system down. That is the ultimate goal. Nobody out there in the Occupy movement that I'm aware of, I'm sure, you know, when people talk among themselves, I know when I was in Washington, the conversation is the system is so corrupt, it's so vile, so filthy, so destructive, it cannot be reformed. It has to be gotten rid of. And a new system based on fair play, justice, truth, honesty, human dignity to take his, oh my God, that sounds like socialism. No, communism. No, I don't know, but it's dangerous. Justice? Respect for workers? Respect for the planet? Respect for human life? Oh my God, what are you talking about, Malloy? And the rest of you radical, left-wing, crazed hippie, whatever the hell you are, what are you talking about? Justice and fair play. Well, I'll tell you what, either the dominant society, the 1%, is going to get this, or we're going to get them. It's just that simple. Either you wake up and smell the coffee, or don't wake up and eventually you smell the guillotine coming down on the back of your neck. It's up to you. It's entirely up to you. The Occupy movement, the union movement, the social justice movement, the human dignity movement, the environmentalist movement. We are trying to tell the 1% that controls all the power, all the reins of power. We're trying to tell you something. Pay attention. We're nonviolent now, except for a few hotheads who decide to earn their pay from the right wingers that hire them to go into the Occupy movement and cause trouble. But, you know, there is a nonviolent movement for social justice. It's a movement based on passive resistance, on civil disobedience, for now. Pay attention, 1%. Pay attention, capitalists. Pay attention, bought and sold members of Congress, House and Senate. Pay attention. Pay attention, executive branch. Pay attention. Isn't that the way a Huxley novel started? I think so, right? the island? Is it the is it island or the island? I think it's island. I read it so long ago, where there's a mina like bird. It's a who just keeps saying what sounds like attention, attention, attention. Now a new report from the Census Bureau. The ranks of America's poorest poor have climbed to a record high. There are 20 million. That's 1 in 15 people. 20 million spread across metropolitan areas all around the nation as this housing bust engineered by these filthy capitalist pigs in New York. The housing bust pushed so many poor people out onto the street, into homeless shelters, shriveled jobs and incomes, pushed people to the point where there's no place to live. They're living in cars. They're living in minivans, if they still have one. 20 million of the poorest of the poor, the third world style poor. And this new census data paint a stark portrait of the nation's haves and have-nots. At a time when unemployment remains high and it's going to stay high, and you know it as well as I do, what, the Republicans are going to bring jobs? Rick Perry? Michelle Bachmann? These Republicans in Congress who refuse to go along with even the minimalist approach of Barack Obama? Keep it up. Keep the pressure on us. Go ahead, 1%. Go ahead, ruling class. Go ahead, capitalist-controlled House and Senate. Keep it up. Didn't any of you people grow up with the old-style pressure cookers? You remember those? You have to be above a certain age. But there are a lot of people above a certain age in the House and the Senate. There really are. You remember pressure cookers? God forbid if your mother forgot to loosen the top when the pressure built up. According to the Associated Press, the numbers released by the Census Bureau underscore the breadth and scope of poverty in America. This is no longer Lyndon Johnson wandering around Appalachia going, well, now I think we ought to take care of these people. No. A professor of economics at Johns Hopkins says, quote, there now really is no unaffected group except maybe the very top income earners. Recessions are supposed to be temporary, he says, and when it's over, everything, you know, kind of returns to where it was before. But the worry now is that the downturn will have long-lasting effects on families who lost jobs, become worse off, and cannot recover. Cannot recover. We'll be right back. Washington, who says, we love the roar of Mike Malloy. Well, thanks, Mary. That's very kind. I appreciate that. Thank you very much for the sponsorship, Mary. 20.5 million Americans, or 6.7% of the U.S. population, make up the poorest of the poor. That's defined as those at 50% or less of the official poverty level. Do you get that? So those living in deep poverty represent nearly half of the 46 million of us scraping by below the poverty line. Almost 50 billion people living below the poverty line, but within that group, another nearly 21 million who are so far down the food chain as to become almost invisible. How do you make 21 million people invisible? Well, you don't. What happens? Well, usually, unless they see some way out of this, they decide to do something about it. And if there are no jobs to go to, no relief from the situation they find themselves in, there's always the risk of violence. Last year, when these poverty figures, census figures were put together, the poorest poor, that means an income of $5,000 or less for an individual annual income, or $11,000 or less for a family of four. What is that, $200 a week for a family of four? The 6.7% of the U.S. population that makes up the poorest of the poor is the highest in almost the entire length of time that the Census Bureau has maintained such records. And yet, in the U.S. Congress, these rancid, rat bastard Republicans are going to continue to block any attempt. Not only block any attempt to help this country get back on its feet, but they are going to actively seek deeper cuts into what's left of the social safety net, so-called, in this country. When the Census Bureau was broken down by the states, 40 states in the District of Columbia had increases in the poorest poor in the past 4 years. 40 states and the District of Columbia. And not one state saw decreases in the poorest poor. District of Columbia ranked the highest at 10.7%. Didn't I read something the other day that the wealthiest part of the United States, this is a classic statistic, the wealthiest part of the United States is the District of Columbia, and the poorest part, we're talking about income disparity here, this is what the Occupy movement partially is about. Next, after D.C., comes Mississippi and New Mexico. Important Nevada. The biggest jump, or not Nevada, but the residents of Nevada, the biggest jump in the poorest of the poor from 4.6% to 7% in the past 4 years. The report goes on to say that extreme poverty continues to be prevalent in the former industrial Midwest, including cities like Detroit, Grand Rapids, Michigan, Akron, Ohio, due to a renewed decline in manufacturing. More is closing down. More is being shipped, broken into pieces, and shipped to China. The capitalists continue to destroy the country. Continue! And why shouldn't they? Labor costs has always been a real pain in the ass to the capitalists. Oh, God, how do we do? Well, first thing we could do is suppress any attempt to join a union. Weren't we just talking about that? Better yet, destroy the unions. Because what the unions do, they try to elevate the working class. They try to make sure people have a livable income, a livable wage. How dare they? That's not what capitalism is about. Capitalism is about capital. It's about the relative hand few of people who control the flow of capital, who control the means of manufacturing, who control the flow of goods and services. And they can choke it off anytime they want to. And if you happen to be among the 20 million or the 46 million who are barely holding on, and you watch as one more factory is broken into pieces in your neck of the woods and sent to China or India or some other godforsaken place where workers will work for one-tenth of what an American worker will work for, what are you going to do about it? I'll tell you what you do about it. You have a choice. Either do nothing or do something. Most of us are still doing nothing. Some of us are doing something. And that something is going to radically change unless attention is paid to what is happening in this country. And if that doing nothing becomes doing something, and that continues to be ignored, then the doing something is going to escalate to the point where the system is going to be brought down. Now, what do you want, Mr. and Ms. Capitalist? What do you want? Do you want to see the system completely brought down and perhaps you put on some sort of moral trial? Some charge of unethical human behavior? What do you want? What do you ultra-wealthy want? What the hell do you want? I'll see you tomorrow night. Take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy.